640 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Five Americans who were imprisoned in Iran are heading home. CBS's Wendy Gillette has more.
The deal that brought the Americans back home will unfreeze $6 billion in Iranian oil revenue. Five Iranians facing charges for nonviolent crimes in the U.S. were also granted clemency. Senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, Lawrence Korb.
Does Iran get something? Sure. Why else would they have done the deal? That's the way it works.
But critics are concerned the agreement will lead to more hostage taking in the future.
Don't be traveling to Iran with an American passport. You know, you're asking for trouble.
Some of the Americans were in prison for years. Wendy Gillette, CBS News.
Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau says security agencies are investigating allegations of a potential link between Indian government agents and the June murder of Hardeep Singh Nijjar, a Sikh leader in British Columbia.
Any involvement of a foreign government in the killing of a Canadian citizen on Canadian soil is an unacceptable violation of our sovereignty.
The Marine Corps orders a two-day safety stand-down for all aviation units after a third jet crash in recent weeks. CBS's David Martin has the latest on an F-35 that disappeared yesterday.
A defense official says searchers have found the wreckage of the missing F-35 jet fighter. It is located in a cotton field in Williamsburg County, South Carolina, about 100 miles northeast of Joint Base Charleston, which had been coordinating the search. The Marine pilot safely ejected from the plane on Sunday, and it had been missing ever since.
A Palmdale, California man is arrested in the ambush killing of an L.A. County Sheriff's deputy, Ryan Klinkenbrumer. The deputy was found in his cruiser at a traffic light Saturday evening. He had been shot in the head. Sheriff Robert Luna.
Based on our pleas yesterday, we wouldn't be here today announcing the arrest if it wasn't for courageous community members who came forward and were so offended by what happened, they had to do something about it.
Stellantis says negotiations with the UAW today were constructive. This as nearly 13,000 auto workers are on strike against three production plants in the Midwest, which the union says could expand if negotiations with the big three automakers are not productive. CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger says a walkout by all 150,000 workers would have a ripple effect.
The longer the strike persists, we could see prices of new and used vehicles start to rise, and suppliers might feel an impact. If you're getting fewer orders for new cars, maybe you can't produce as many headlights or brakes or other auto parts, and that could lead to layoffs in those subcategories of the auto sector.
This is CBS News.
When you think of hiring, think of Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring system helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
With the news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. Planned Parenthood doctors in Milwaukee had been working before today. They've just been in Illinois providing abortion care. The organization resumed providing the service today after ceasing following the U.S. Supreme Court decision. A statement says Planned Parenthood Wisconsin will observe laws recognized before the Roe decision, which limits the procedure to 20 weeks after probable fertilization. Around 10,000 showed up for a Franklin concert this weekend, but people living near the show location say the noise was too much. Franklin Field played host to the Tacos and Tequila Festival Saturday, with rain not stopping thousands from showing up. As far as the noise, it's the latest in complaints from neighbors of the field and the Rock Sports Complex, saying that there's too much noise in general emanating from that facility. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
Ron had a tax problem he just couldn't handle on his own.
I owed the IRS taxes for over 5 years, but I didn't have any money to pay the taxes.
Those years cost him dearly.
Most of it was fees and interest. It was horrible.
Ron finally called in the pros.
I called Optima Tax Relief. And boy, am I happy I did.
The leading tax resolution firm, Optima, is A-plus rated by the Better Business Bureau. They've resolved over $1 billion for their clients. Ron was overjoyed.
They settled my account with IRS. I was ecstatic. They are a lifesaver. They are. I am so happy.
Take Ron's advice and call Optima now for a free consultation.
Yeah, don't do like I did and wait. Call Optima Tax Relief. Do it now. You'll be ecstatic like me.
Call 800-343-6460. 800-343-6460. 800-343-6460.
Optima Tax Relief.
Testimonial from an actual client. Some restrictions apply. For complete details, please visit OptimaTaxRelief.com.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
My immediate thought when I read about this and then watched it today was, please don't die, Senator McConnell. I couldn't disagree more strongly with Senator McConnell's policy positions, but he has been one of the only elected officials that's in a leadership position for the Republican Party that hasn't completely supplicated himself to Donald Trump.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Weeknights at 6 p.m.
on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Germany enacted a new law banning installations of most oil and gas heating systems starting in 2024.
Good.
Critics say the law's targets were watered down, but it will still cut emissions from the home heating sector by nearly two-thirds. And finally, encouraging news for building electrification, a new study finds that even in sub-zero temperatures, all electric heat pumps actually outperform fossil fuels. Even at temperatures down to minus 30 degrees Fahrenheit, electric heat pumps are twice as efficient and cheaper than oil and gas heating systems. And that may be why in Norway, electric heat pumps today make up almost all heating installations.
And beginning next year, a whole bunch of Americans are going to be able to put heat pumps into their own homes and have them paid for under the Inflation Reduction Act.
Yep.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Vivek Ramaswamy, great new proposal he's got. And look, you know, understand, Republicans look at federal employees as whipping boys. It's a good whipping tool. You know, it gets the base all riled up and all bunched up in the panties because, you know, those people still have health care and retire a little bit of retirement and earn generally a decent wage. So, of course, we've got to destroy that. But Ramaswamy says if he becomes president in 2025, 1.5 million federal employees, they're going to get the axe. Day one, he's going to get rid of all the, I mean, yeah, the who's who of right-wing winery. The FBI, the ATF, Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the Education Department, Food and Nutrition Services within the Department of Agriculture. Man, going after, well, everything that they believe goes after them. It's kind of like bringing back the good old days of patronage, which seems to be their wet dream. And here to share some thoughts on what this might look like and what the possibilities are, I've asked Jackie Simon to come talk with us. Jackie is the Director of Public Policy for AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees, AFGE.org, the website, if you want to check out the work that they do there. Jackie, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me.
So your members, the federal government employees, Republican whipping children, Ramaswamy says we're going to dump 1.5 million of them. Can you do that?
Not really. It's extremely unlikely. You know, even Republicans have treated some of his claims as ridiculous, and this one, I mean, it's not an absolute impossibility, but boy, would he have to have the stars align for himself.
But what would that look like? You know, because as I was reading through these stories, I'm going, you know, why would you want to get rid of all of these different agencies? What's the goal here? And I keep coming back to privatization and profitization of the things that we do for ourselves. And for me, it comes down to the money. And I look at him as an entrepreneur saying, hey, we can privatize government.
Well, it's interesting. I haven't heard him say that he would want to continue the functions of all of those agencies, only to have them carried out by private contractors. I've heard him say that he wants to eliminate these agencies altogether and the function they perform. Because as you said, he doesn't like anything that they do. He doesn't like what the FBI does. He doesn't like what Food and Nutrition Service does. He doesn't like what the ATF does. So I'm not, I mean, maybe you heard something that I hadn't heard yet, that he actually wants an ATF. He just wants it, the work of ATF carried out by private contractors. But my understanding was this idea of just pure elimination.
Right.
And, you know, he can't do that unilaterally. He needs Congress to do that because all of these agencies are authorized to exist by law. And he can't change laws. Congress changes laws.
Well, he seems to think, the one article I read, he seems to think because the Supreme Court is a 6-3 conservative court that he's going to be able to do whatever he wants. And the six conservatives in robes are going to side with him.
Right. No, I mean, he says a lot of really simplistic things. But the fact of the matter is all of these agencies, all the programs of the federal government exist because Congress enacted laws that instructed the executive branch to carry out these functions. And so you've got a situation where you've got, you know, 1.5 million is, you know, almost 3/4 of the entire federal workforce. So it's more a whole lot more than the agencies that he's listed. And he seems to be saying that he thinks he can do these mass layoffs without worrying about the due process rights that civil servants have as part of their jobs when they've, you know, gotten some kind of tenure. And what he doesn't realize is that federal employees associated with those rights also have rights in the context of what we call a reduction in force. And so when he's doing his mass layoffs, you know, it really would be individual by individual. And they would consider, agencies are required to consider, you know, how long you've worked there, what kind of appointment you have, whether you're a veteran, and your performance ratings, and they have to consider all of those kind of things. But if it's not a temporary layoff, if it's a permanent kind of layoff, that in our jargon, that in itself becomes an adverse action that triggers these rights that he thinks he's avoided.
Right.
So he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Yeah. The reason I said that he would profitize it is, you know, the function that these do. I hear people all the time say, you know, they're job killers and they're, you know, they're doing all this stuff. The moneyed interest would be thrilled if we got rid of half of our government, because they could do whatever they want and run roughshod over anything they want. At least that's my thought in this.
Oh, there's no doubt that you're exactly right. My only point is that he can't do it because he would be in conflict with the law. I mean, we still have some rule of law in this country. I mean, it's always dicey and threatened, but a president, any president, can't just do that without regard to Congress.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just, you know, would he have a compliant Congress? I mean, if we got to a point where a Ramaswamy could become our president, you know, the kind of an election that would elect, I don't want to call him an idiot, an irresponsible person like that. And, you know, he almost, I'm not going to say he makes.
Yeah, I mean, look, he elected Trump. I mean, and there's a possibility he could win again. So,
I know.
You know, for me, anything is possible. Because here, the reason I think this is important, and I'm with you, I don't think that Ramaswamy is going to win. I don't think he's going to be able to get rid of, you know, 1.5 million. But Trump has already said if he gets back in, He's going to grind the axe. You've got the Heritage Foundation now, who's got this Project 2025 that they're putting out on how they're going to reshape government and bring back the good old days of patronage. There's a lot of scary stuff coming.
There is. But I'm not saying that I disagree with you. There's a lot of scary stuff already happening. More people are being hired outside the competitive service right now than are hired competitively. There's lots of accepted, what we call accepted service, you know, exceptions to the rule. The exceptions now exceed the rule in new hires. All these agencies want and get authority to just hire directly without regard to, you know, a competition. You know, one of the things we often say is when you make it real easy to hire like that, you have to, on the flip side, make it real easy to fire. And so the people who are hired that way have a lot fewer rights when it comes to, you know, the end of their job, whether they're term employees or temporary employees. You know, their status is not anywhere near as secure as a regular civil service, competitive service job. And the thing that gets the most attention is this Schedule F, which Trump did by executive order right at the end of his term in October, that never really got off the ground. But, you know, he promises to do it with a vengeance. And DeSantis has taken up the Schedule F banner, Ramaswamy, and of course, Heritage.
Right.
And that basically could really be the death knell of the civil service.
For those who don't know, what is Schedule F?
Schedule F, we say Schedule F for flunkies. It basically says that any job that is in any way connected to policy, the president's policy or the president's agenda, basically can be turned into a political appointment and you become an at-will employee. So you can be fired for not being sufficiently loyal to the president and his agenda.
So these are the patronage jobs that I've been talking about.
This is the patronage, like you said. And you're not hired. I mean, you know, on paper, it says you're supposed to be qualified for the job. But, you know, we all know the kind of qualifications that and the way they adhere to.
You know, like putting a guy on a federal bench who's never actually been in a courtroom.
Yeah. I mean, one of the most egregious during the end of the Trump administration, they had this guy who was, you know, 15 minutes out of college in charge of, you know, presidential personnel and appointments in the White House. I mean, it was unbelievable. And he was issuing loyalty tests. And he and his minions would go around to the agencies and observe people to make sure that they were carrying out the president's agenda. Sometimes we wish the Biden administration would follow suit.
I don't want that. I've said this before, Jackie. I don't want federal workers to be on either side. I want boring bureaucrats who know their job, do their job, and provide the American people with the best possible services, and not being political. I don't even want them to know who the president is. Just do their job instead of moving where Republicans want to take us into this loyalty oath kind of positioning.
Yeah, I hear you, and I 100% agree. I'm just really referring to the fact that President Biden issued executive orders very early in his term and instructed the agencies to treat the unions very well and bargain good contracts and treat federal employees with respect and dignity. And there's an awful lot of federal managers who say, yeah, right. Make me and ignore that kind of stuff. So it's just very different from when Trump was in power and it was yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir. And now that Biden is in the White House, it's kind of like, yeah, whatever. That's what I'm referring to.
No, I hear you. And that's where I want decent people running our government. And look, at the end of this, I look at Ramaswamy, I look at Trump. The federal worker has, as I said at the beginning, become the whipping boy for, you know, the right, you know, listen to talk radio. It's all about, you know, how bad they are. And look, I know a lot of federal employees. I know a lot of people who work at the VA. These are good, decent, hardworking people who don't need to be used as political pawns. And it's a shame that we're in this place.
No, you're absolutely right. It's a perennial. They love to beat up on us.
Now, here's the thing. You talk about patronage. We're talking about this. I look at the Heritage Foundation now has this Project 2025. And look, the Heritage Foundation always has, you know, some kind of scheme. But this seems like something really, you know, 30 chapters, 900 pages written by, you know, more than, you know, a couple hundred people on how to reshape government and how to get those patron employees in. In fact, they've got training programs to make sure that you're sufficiently loyal. I mean, it's really all encompassing. And with a Trump presidency, this could happen.
Yeah, they have a legal theory that they'll want to test that argues that the president is the ultimate boss of every federal employee in the executive branch. And as such, every federal employee ought to be a political appointee, answerable only to the president. And like you said before, with Ramaswamy, which is a kind of slightly different situation, you know, I think that's basically one of the legal theories that they'd like to test out with this Supreme Court, and whether civil service protections and the law that was passed in 1978 is constitutional, and whether or not by law federal employees should have any kind of rights on the job.
Well, we're tearing up the 20th century. Why not this too?
Yeah.
Lastly, I got to get your thoughts on a completely different topic. The UAW has been on strike for a couple of days. You've got, you know, thousands of people on the picket lines. Any thoughts?
Well, I mean, we're rooting for them for sure. I mean, the UAW historically has sort of set the standard for union activism. The best standard of living the working class people have ever achieved has been largely through the successful efforts of the UAW. And so, you know, they seem to be leading the way again, and we wish them the best. I think that their arguments in favor of restoring defined benefit pensions and getting rid of this two-tier wage system and substantially higher wages, given the profitability of these companies they work for. They've got great arguments on their side. I think their membership is well-educated, and they know what they're doing, and they've got a good strategy, and I'm rooting for them. Yep. That's all I can say.
As we all should be. Jackie Simon, I appreciate you taking time for us, sharing some thoughts on these horrible ideas put forth by my Republican friends. I look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Thanks so much, Jackie Simon. She is the policy director there at AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees, AFGE.org, the website, if you want to check out the work that they do. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back after this. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So let's talk destroying institutions. The American Library Association, the planet's oldest library association, almost 150 years old. They're struggling under partisan divide as Montana, Missouri, and Texas announced that they were going to sever ties with the library group. What do you think it's over? It's over. Yeah. What, you know, it is. And look, you've got the crazy people, you know, book bannings have been happening. And now a Republican candidate for governor in Missouri, the Show Me State, showing us how crazy they are. They are promising book burnings. This candidate and a state senator took out their flamethrower and started burning some boxes, and said that in the videos, I'm taking a flamethrower to cardboard boxes representing what I'm going to do to the leftist policies and rhino corruption. But let me be clear, you bring those woke pornographic books, meaning just about any books, into Missouri schools and try to brainwash our kids, and I'll burn those two on the front lawn of the governor's mansion. Yeah. Book burnings are coming back. We're going to make book burning great again. Thanks, crazy people. Let's go to the phone. Got Alice on one. Alice, how are you?
Insane. And they're all crazy, I'll tell you that. In our little hamlet, they've lost their minds. We have five council members, and four of them are Republicans. And two of them in particular have been known to scream about the war on Christmas and telling us what to do and the poor Christians and whatnot. And now they plan on this new ordinance. Now, mind you, we only have four streets proper and four side streets. We have no room to grow because we're surrounded by the river on two sides and then the township on the other two sides. But now we have to, when it snows, we have to go out and shovel the street, and I'm not joking. And if we don't do it, it's a $1,000 fine, and it's a criminal offense.
You're going to shovel the street?
I'm not kidding. I swear to you. I said I'm not shoveling no street, because let me tell you what's going to happen. I'm going to have a heart attack, and then my son's going to see you, and he's going to be a very wealthy man. They're totally insane, and their theory is, well, because they want to make our little hamlet safe and make sure they don't get sued. And I'm like, well, didn't we buy a plow truck 2 years ago? Isn't that what you guys are supposed to be doing? Isn't that like part of your job besides just making rules, telling everybody what they're supposed to do and living like you think they should? So, yeah, they've all lost their minds, all the Republicans.
Another fun story of Republican governance. Thanks, Alice. Appreciate it.
Yep.
No, this is, again, you know, one of these things, and I'm not surprised by it. Look, you know, these are the people who tell us that government's bad, government shouldn't do anything. And, you know, then they set out to prove just how bad Republican governance is. You know, the one thing that you would expect from your township or your hamlet is that they plow the snow. I mean, that used to be expected. No. Can you imagine a bunch of citizens out, you know, we're just going to, you know, with our hand shovels, go shoveling, you know, the main street coming into town? Wow. But tax cuts for rich people, so we don't have to worry about paying anyone, or ban books so that we don't know that they used to. This is where, you know, I go back to my reading in 1984, and it's no wonder they want to ban 1984, because that book alone, that one book alone, you know, made most of my political thoughts as a young kid, you know, pretty much in stone, because we are living in that Orwellian kind of world. And I've often said, I don't know whether, you know, it was, you know, 1984 was a cautionary tale of, hey, you know, this is bad, don't do this, or if it was a playbook. Because once I look at it as it's a cautionary tale, we should not do this. And I look at my friends on the right as, no, this is perfectly fine. This is what we should do. Yeah. Wow. I mean, just wow. A new study out finds that college educated voters have more liberal views on economics than non-college educated folks when it comes to taxation, social safety net, income redistribution, and government intervention in the economy. And this is kind of shocking to me, because, you know, I'll tell you, you know, I went through a couple of econ courses, and they get you thinking like an economist, you know, like a corporatist, like a capitalist. You know, these models, and these are models they're sacred, and you shall never violate them. And, you know, I would think that, you know, working class people would go, no, we want to make sure that we don't struggle and suffer. We want to make sure that, you know, food stamps are plentiful so that if we fall in hard times, we get help. That unemployment benefits are much more generous in the event that I lose my job, I don't end up losing my home. But the weird part is it's just the inverse. And this is what this study is saying, that, you know, people who are more college educated, they're more open to intervention, government intervention and helping, the economy, you know, one way or the other. They're into a social safety net because of, you know, they understand the public good. Whereas you talk to a lot of, especially the red hat wearing working class, you know, screw those people, no unemployment, there's part of me goes, they'd even be against workers' comp. I mean, we are literally shredding the 20th century. And as I've been saying, you know, they want to take us back to the good old days of the Lochner era, where if you're hungry enough and desperate enough to work in deplorable conditions for poverty wages, that's your right. It's your liberty. It's your freedom. And I go, you know, when do we shake ourselves awake and go, no, you know, again, it goes back to my high school government teacher. Which are you closest to, being rich or being poor? And the vast majority of us are closer to being poor than we are to ever being rich. Interesting times. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Remember, check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. You can find our merch store. Also, the podcast. If you miss any portion of the program, it's always there. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1895. That was the day that Booker T. Washington delivered what came to be known as the Atlanta Compromise Speech, which outlined his vision for race relations and black labor in the South. Washington was the founder of the Tuskegee Normal and Industrial Institute, a college designed to train black students for careers in teaching, farming, and other trades. Washington was invited to give an address to the Cotton States and International Exposition in Atlanta. It was the first time that a black man was asked to speak before a black and white Southern audience. In his speech, he urged Southern landowners and business leaders to employ black labor over European immigrants. He said, quote, "To those of the white race who look to the incoming of those of foreign birth and strange tongue and habits for the prosperity of the South, were I permitted, I would repeat what I say to my own race. Cast down your bucket where you are." He continued, "Cast it down among those people who have, without strikes and labor wars, tilled your fields, cleared your forests, built your railroads and cities, and brought forth treasures from the bowels of the earth and helped make possible this magnificent representation of the progress of the South." His speech outlined a plan for gradual black economic advancement. He declared, quote, "Agitation of questions of social equality is the extremist folly." Other black leaders, most notably W.E. Du Bois, rejected Booker T. Washington's idea of gradual advancement. Instead, Du Bois fought racial discrimination through the legal system and helped to found the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, the NAACP. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Corporate and governmental hucksters intentionally cloak their schemes in convoluted obfuscations so we commoners can't really know what they're saying or doing to us. That's why our Hightower Lowdown team takes pride in regularly trying to deconstruct their arcane jargon, translating it into plain language. Recently, for example, I pointed out the slick deceit in Big Pharma's assertion that its outrageously high drug prices are just a factor of, quote, core cost recovery. Huh? That's supposed to mean that it costs a lot to do basic research for discovering new medicines, so they must recover those costs. But wait, I hollered, basic drug research is not paid for by brand-name corporate monopolists. Rather, this essential humane work is done by such public entities as the National Institutes of Health, paid for by us taxpayers. and it's a huge tax-paid subsidy. In 2020, a study by the Institute of New Economic Thinking laid out the scam in stark terms, quote, "Taxpayers have been footing the bill for every new drug approved between 2010 and 2019. Hello, every new drug. The Institute's study traced the funding of 356 new drugs approved in that period, finding that a whopping $230 billion in public finance research paid for the basic science that created the medicines. In what the researchers called a robust pipeline to industry, monopolistic patents were then obtained on those ingredients by Big Pharma to market drugs made possible by the scientific capital we taxpayers invested." This is Jim Hightower saying, for drug profiteers, this is manna from heaven. The system hands new drug products to them, letting them arbitrarily fix prices that enrich their investors were nearly double the profit levels of other corporate powers. If you suspect the system is rigged to gouge you, there it is.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, the reporting coming out of Colorado, evidently, and this is, I gotta tell you, this is dumb. I'm not on this bandwagon, and I think it's dumb. But evidently, it's being reported that Lauren Boebert could face sex crime charges under Colorado's lewdness law. Because if you saw the video, they were groping each other. She was blowing smoke and just being, you know, the kind of trailer trash that you expect that she is. Just your run-of-the-mill garden variety. But I don't know that it rises to the level of criminal. I mean, really? No, I'm not there. You know, let her be who she is. Don't martyr her. That simple. Now, interestingly enough, her husband has come out in defense, her ex-husband. Jason, who exposed himself to the world, I guess, he says that the divorce has been devastating, that I hold all responsibility for. He said it upsets me to see everyone believe she left me over fame and a new lifestyle. That's far from the truth. Much of this is on me because the problem starts at the root, and I am the root. Yeah, I don't care. I just don't. Don't bring her up on charges. That's just dumb. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top story of the day and everything else we can get to, our good friend Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman and political analyst. Bob, thanks for taking time for us. Did I lose Bob? Bob, how are you? Yeah, I think I lost Bob. Yeah, we lost Bob. But here's the thing. This is one of the weird moments where I look at this and I go, no, do not, under any circumstances, go after her like this. She got enough problems, enough craziness. Don't martyr her. Because you can see that the fundraiser, they're coming after me. Now, what's interesting to me, what really is interesting, is the boyfriend that she was with, the guy that she was all over groping, doing all that stuff with, actually owns like a bar where they do drag shows. I mean, this is the part that's hysterical. The guy owns a bar and they do drag shows at this. And she's this, you know, the family values type, the hypocrite type. But I think we got Bob back. Bob, how are you?
I did a Boebert or Marjorie Taylor Greene. I hit the Bluetooth button accidentally. That's what happened.
That explains it. So what do you think? Do you think they should charge her under the criminal code in Colorado for lewdness, or just write this up to she's just being who she is. She's just, you know,
in my news notes, because I just had to, one day out of four this happened, I put one story, Beetlejuice, 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 I put across, you know, because it was snarky. Yep. And as you know, and that was it. I didn't even put any of this because I'm like, you know, okay, I don't know how they keep her in there. She barely won the last election, but yet they won't and they can't charge her because, look, go look at concert footage, you know, or even go look at a Disney on Ice skating show. Somebody's kissing somebody probably. So, yeah, this would just absolutely, she would fight it with lawyers. She would probably win. And then, yeah, yeah, let it go. And as far as her and her ex-husband, that's her business. But you know what? He might have some entanglements, you know?
Yep.
She's in Congress. Maybe, I don't know how much money he made. Maybe he pays a little alimony, or she pays a little alimony to him. Who knows?
No, I think he makes more than she does. You know, all those sweetheart contracts he got with the oil. He was making $500,000 a year.
Even with taking his clothes off?
Yeah, wow. Well, especially after that, I guess. No, if you remember, you know, when she had to do her disclosures, he was making, like, from the one oil and gas company, you know, like, as a consultant, he was making $500,000 a year. That wasn't patronage. That wasn't, hey, influence your wife to vote the way we need her to. That wasn't any of that. Yeah. Never mind.
He'll still support her in most cases because they've got entanglements, you know. And she's in Congress. He might need a favor.
Yep. Now, here's the weird thing. I was just reading a story earlier today, because I use this thing with Boebert's husband, who, you know, there's some questions there of corporate money going into his pocket that wasn't there before she came into Congress. And I saw this story today about Kevin McCarthy's brother, who got something like, you know, $6-7 million or some kind of, you know, a huge amount of money in government contracts. Claiming he was, I guess, American. And some weird thing where you go, you know, he's cashing in on the brother's name. They're impeaching, you know, Joe Biden for kind of the same thing. Doesn't this seem a bit hypocritical?
Well, I think it's frankly all hypocritical in the sense that they need to either clarify the laws. You know, when Abramoff got in trouble, then they made this big deal. And, you know, he got in trouble for other things I wasn't involved with, but I got in trouble for a golf trip and the underreporting of that golf trip. Later, they're like, we're gonna drain the swamp of these trips. Go ahead on Google how many trips have occurred since I was there. Yeah. You know, just Google it. So they do this from time to time. Then they'll go out and, but you know, if they want to tighten the whole family thing, because look, if you look at this, you had the Clinton Foundation and there was the one big question about the online chancellor appointment by Bill Clinton, et cetera, and she was Secretary of State. Trump went in the White House, taking his kids in there and letting them still conduct business. That was outrageous. And then you've got, you know, of course, you know, the allegations with Hunter Biden. When I was there, I can tell you there were families that had consulting firms, and the dad, I can't even remember, honestly, whether it was Republican, Democrat, but the dad, I think that there was a Republican. There was one of each. The dads who were congresspeople had authority over defense contracting, and their kids were in defense contracting firms.
Yep.
You know, this occurred all the time. And like I said, I don't begrudge anybody's kids to make money, but they probably need to Congress needs to kind of clarify this if they don't like it, of what you can or you can't do.
I go back to, you know, when I was a kid, you know, Jimmy Carter was in the White House, and, you know, you remember Billy Beer? I mean, you know, he was cashing in literally. You look at Reagan's kids, they cashed in. You look at, Roger Clinton.
Then, Rick, you got the relatives that you want to deny.
Roger Clinton, you know. There's one. I forgot about
there you
him.
Go.
But,
okay.
But this is how things have always been done. And
forever.
So to say now we're going to impeach somebody because, you know, the family, you know, made money off of Biden's name. I'm sorry. Unless you can draw me that straight line where there's a quid pro quo with Biden, there's nothing here for me.
Right. Well, and that's why, you know, there used to be the Honest Services fraud law. And if they can't get you for bribery, I mean, they can get you Honest Services. If you work for a company, you go to a ball game, tell the company you were sick, you went out of state, they can get you federal charges, you know. That had a Supreme Court decision against it. So the government, if it wants, can do this wide brush. But for the bribery, they have to have some type of connection where, you know, the president did something where you've got an email and it says, hey, you better help my kid out, you know.
Yeah. I want to see that email.
Right.
But we're heading quickly towards a government shutdown. Earlier, I talked with someone from the American Federation of Government Employees about Vivek Ramaswamy's idea to fire 1.5 million employees because he wants to, you know, do mass layoffs. And she said, you just can't do that. And I'm going, my mind then went to, hold on, Republicans want to do a mass layoff. They just want to shut the government down entirely. any thoughts on how we're going to get out of this mess?
Yeah. Well, here's the one certainty I will tell you right now is that McCarthy doesn't want a shutdown, doesn't want near a shutdown. He wants this. This one isn't some BS thing. Now, I'm not, because of the way they're doing it, because there's no Democrats involved in doing this. I'm calling this, instead of the shutdown, this is the CFS, Circular Firing Squad. That's what it is. It's not a shutdown. It's a Circular Firing Squad. McCarthy's got 12 people. If you count how many votes he can spare, he needs to pick up basically eight Democratic votes. Now, the way he will do that is to craft a continuing resolution that will be clean and not contain language that would, make a Democratic member not like it. Now, the second thing is, if he does that, which he should do for good government, we did continuing resolutions with Democratic votes. But if he does that, guess what they're going to do? They're going to move to throw him out because he cooperated with the enemy. So he's in a no-win position on this thing.
And do you remember when he was going through the whole confirmation and the whole thing? And I said, I want this for him because I want this moment that he's living through right now, where the acid reflux is in his throat and he's seeing the crazy caucus in his sleep and he's waking up in the middle of the night with heartburn because they're driving him crazy. Well, this is that moment.
Well, sure it is. And the thing he did, which he should have let it gone 30 rounds instead of 15 that it went, he never should have, and no speaker should ever agree that one member sets off a cascade of, take them out and have a vote. If you do government in that way, then you can get a member either side of the aisle, or somebody, when Pelosi was speaker, somebody, got mad at her. They could do that every day.
Yeah.
And it rots the system. So McCarthy's got that, which he should never have done. The other thing is, and this is my personal biggest disappointment, I love the appropriation bills. I've said it for years on your show. I like doing them separate. Every item, one by one, has to be argued. People hear about it. No matter what the issue is, the groups put out notices. They don't do that when they do continuing resolutions. McCarthy promised, and the Freedom Group wanted this to be done, and guess what? We're sitting here, and it wasn't done.
Yeah.
It simply wasn't done, and now he's sitting here with this mess, which he would have been better to have one way or the other pass the bills, but then again, he couldn't pass the bills. This is catch-22, Rick. He couldn't pass the bills because the Freedom Caucus won't vote for any bill that doesn't have 900 pages of additional new language in the law.
Yeah, he's in. He put himself in a jackpot.
No way.
And I love the fact that House Majority Whip Tom Emmer, Republican from Minnesota, said the patients are now in charge of the hospital. Saying, look, they've lost control. The leadership has completely lost control. Everyone's eating everyone. And if you're a Democrat, you've got to just sit back and let that happen.
If you're on the Democratic side, like Hakeem Jeffries, the minority leader, has to tell his members, look, let them go. Just say, hey, we're willing to be part of a functional government. We're sitting here. Give us a phone call. We're not going to get in the way. We're willing to help. Call us. That's all they need to do, the Democratic side. That's it. Because the Republican side is doing enough damage, and you don't want any interaction from the Democratic side except, hey, we're willing to talk about this. We're willing to keep the government going. That's all you need.
Yeah, I mean, a shutdown's all on them, and this is why I do believe McCarthy knows it's a loser for them, which is why he's got to figure something out, or, he's going to be out.
Well, if they ever actually remove him, if that ever happens, the chaos that will ensue in that House will guarantee, I don't care who's running for president or who's ahead or behind in the polls, presidential level. Rick, if that ever happens, that McCarthy is thrown out by the Republicans, the ensuing chaos will guarantee the House will be democratically controlled with a few votes to spare. That's what it will guarantee.
That's why I keep saying, hey, Florida, the forehead guy, go on, pull the trigger, go after him.
Oh, put him in as speaker. How about that?
him and Marjorie, three names. Good luck. Get on. Wow. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Bob Nay, former Ohio congressman, political analyst. I got to get your thoughts on Vivek Ramaswamy again. He's stirring it up. He's the new Trump, if you will. Always getting attention. But he now says he regrets taking the two doses of the COVID vaccine that he's got. He regrets it now, Bob. Never going to do it again.
Well, you know, I mean, he said a lot of things. As you know, originally he made statements on Trump, and then he backtracked on that. And then, of course, you know, his wife, now I think she disagreed with it. I know she's a surgeon. And I think she supported getting the vaccines. I'm pretty sure.
The fun. And finally, got to get your thoughts on the Trump interview that was. It's like every time he opens his mouth, it's like Exhibit A, Your Honor. Evidently, he has now said it was his decision to challenge the election, he and he alone, and that he dismissed his lawyers' opinions because he didn't respect them and they were wrong.
Well, I mean, I'm trying to look at this, and is he trying to fall on the sword, or which I can't imagine due to narcissism? But I'm trying to figure out, making that statement legally, what does that do? What does that do on the court cases? I mean, don't you agree that there's something behind? He's not the type of guy, hey, I'm going to step up. Hey, Rudy, he calls Rudy on the phone. I'm going to step up to the plate. You know, I'm going to take you all out of this.
I'm going to fall. Not a guy who falls on the sword.
Go home. No. So there's some, you know, motive here, just like he did in that that interview about abortion. I mean, he wasn't far off in the sense of, that's an okay idea. You establish a date. You have this national standard they can talk about. But the conservatives, of course, their heads are blowing off. Then he made a couple other statements that's freaking them out. And, you know, one would say, well, they won't go for Biden over Trump. Well, guess what, though? A lot of them may stay home. So he did a lot of things in that interview that I'm just trying to figure out why.
No, but I'm scratching my head.
You know, the legal part, there's something behind this as to why he made that statement.
And there's part of me that goes, you know, I'm with you on this, but there's also a part of me that goes, no, I think he's just off the beaten path. I think he really believes that he is right. He did nothing wrong. Because he said, I did nothing wrong. I did nothing wrong. And, you know, it's like when my kids were small, whenever they would repeat themselves, you knew they were lying. Same thing with Trump. You know, I did nothing wrong. I did nothing wrong. And now we're seeing Jeffrey Clark saying that he acted under Trump's direction. Now you got him throwing him under the bus. It just seems like a lot of the rats are jumping ship.
Mm-hmm. Well, Nancy Pelosi was talking about, she said that, you know, he's projecting when he blames other people. And, you know, that he's projecting his own thoughts into basically people are avatars for his thoughts. And, you know, he's claiming he, in that interview, that he requested the guard, you know, and of 10,000 that he requested it. And there's no record of that. So I don't know. I mean,
yeah, that must be in the filing cabinet.
Well, of course, I can understand. He, you know,
that must be in the filing cabinet with the health care plan that was, you know, fabulous and cheap, and the order that he declassified everything. It must be in the same filing cabinet.
But if in fact he doesn't have some legal thought behind that statement he made, then his lawyers have to be just going out of their minds.
Yeah. They've got to be going, please shut up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
There you go. Bob, as always, appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick.
Our good friend Bob Nay. I mean, seriously, the guy, every time he opens his mouth, Exhibit A, Your Honor. We got to be into the triple letters by now. Let's take a quick break right back to wrap things up. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come with us. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1830. That was the day that Tom Thumb, the first locomotive built in the U.S., raced a horse on a 9-mile course in Maryland. Here is part of John Latrobe's eyewitness account of that historic race. At first, the gray had the best of it, for his steam would be applied to the greatest advantage on the instant, while the engine had to wait until the rotation of the wheels set the blower to work. The horse was perhaps a quarter of a mile ahead when the safety valve of the engine lifted and the thin blue vapor issuing from it showed an excess of steam. The blower whistled, the steam blew off in vapory clouds. The pace increased, the passengers shouted. The engine gained on the horse. Soon it lapped him. The race was neck and neck. Then the engine passed the horse, but it was not repeated. For just at this time, the band which drove the pulley and blower slipped from the drum. The safety valve ceased to scream, and the engine began to wheeze and pant. The horse gained on the machine and passed it. And although the band was presently replaced, the steam again did its best. The horse was too far ahead to be overtaken and came in the winner of the race. The horse may have won the race that day, but the iron horse would soon revolutionize transportation. The railway industry also played an integral part in labor union history. From the early railroad worker brotherhoods to Eugene V. Debs' American Railway Union to A. Philip Randolph's Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters, railroads and the workers who built them and ran them helped to build and strengthen the American labor movement.
I've been working on the railroad all the live long day.
Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show. Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, ricksmithshow.com. So it's good news. Going to end today on some good news and an email. The good news, all of the shaming works. I can't believe you said that. Shaming works. Last week we were talking about Drew Barrymore. Going to start her talk show up again. Going to scab, get across the picket line. Going to, you know, stick it to the Writers Guild. And everyone went crazy. You know, we were one of the first people to point it out. We came out and said, look, I'm sorry, Drew. You're a scab. Don't do it. Here's what should happen if you scab. And then she came out with that bizarre video of, you know, I take responsibility and, you know, kind of, you know, yeah, this is all bad, but, you know, I'm the victim in this. Well, evidently, she has now heard us. Yep, she's heard. She said, I have listened to everyone and I am making the decision to pause the show's premiere until the strike is over. I have no words to express my deepest apologies to anyone I have hurt, and of course to our incredible team who works on the show and has made it what it is today. We really tried to find our way forward, and I truly hope for a resolution for the entire industry very soon. Well, this then triggered Jennifer Hudson to do the same with her show, and then... And I'm surprised at this. Bill Maher came out and said he will not scab either because of the pressure. The shaming works. And this is the kind of stuff that, you know, I've talked about. As a society, we have to call these people out when they scab and then hold them accountable when they scab. I may now watch the Drew Barrymore show now that I know it exists. And she's not going to scab once the writers go back to work. This is how the working class should be operating. This is solidarity. And making someone like Drew Barrymore, who's worth $100+ million, care about this issue is quite an accomplishment. It means that she was getting no positive reinforcement whatsoever. And it was purely a business decision first, knowing that, hey, if I do this, the Rick Smiths of the world will never watch her show or any of her movies. You are ostracized. You're done, in my view. And as a society, I think we have to think that way again. If you're not with us, you're most certainly on these issues on the wrong side of history. So good on her. I'm not going to apologize for anything I said last week because I meant every word of it. I don't apologize because If I said it, I meant it. But good on her in this moment. Got an email from Lewis I want to finish up today with. He said, in regards to the study you mentioned, it's not surprising for these reasons. And I said, look, college-educated people are more liberal in their economic theories, social safety net, taxation, things like that. He says, A, the working class and poor have been demonized for decades by the right because of their need for the various social safety net programs. All the while, the right uses dog whistle campaigns and arguments to convince a segment of these populations, usually white, I guess, that they don't want to be like the groups of color.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.